The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. It's time to bring out the Better Worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week we speak with best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday folks just like you whose small acts are making a big difference in the world. And that's why we call them Better Worldians. And speaking of Better Worldians, let me introduce you to my co-host, Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 30 years. She's also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. And now, here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you today to share all the good that's being done in the world. Now, let me also introduce Gregory Hansel. Gregory has a background in philosophy and world religions, and most importantly, has spent over 15 years at the intersection of technology, social causes, and big ideas.
Hi, this is Greg. I'm so glad you can all join us here on Better Worldians Radio. Let me first just tell you a bit about my dad, Ray, who you just heard from. He's a serial entrepreneur who successfully founded and with Mary Sue took public a national marketing firm. Giving back has always been really important to Dad, who supports many causes, especially disadvantaged children and their families. And by the way, we're the family team that created the popular social game on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charities. To date, over 25 million good deeds have been done in A Better World by more than 2.7 million people. And in the month of December, we're supporting Operation Warm, a nonprofit that brings happiness and warmth to children in need by providing them with brand new winter coats. When our players complete 300,000 good deeds in the game this month, we'll release funds to purchase new winter coats for 50 kids in need.
This week on Better Worldians Radio, we're speaking with Jim Liske, CEO of Prison Fellowship Ministries. Jim will discuss Prison Fellowship's Angel Tree program that helps reconnect families and gives joy to children at Christmas time. Jim Liske joined Prison Fellowship as Chief Executive Officer in July 2011 and assumed the additional title of President in 2013. Liske has led the organization's effort to foster the moral rehabilitation of prisoners through faith-based programming, advocating for restorative criminal justice policies at the state and national levels, and mobilizing churches to be agents of positive change in the lives of those affected by the cycle of crime and incarceration and in their communities as well. As the leader of Prison Fellowship, Liske has visited more than 100 prisons and jails to talk with inmates and prison leaders about creating more humane, transformative correctional facilities. Jim speaks frequently with legislators and prison officials about the importance of faith and values-based moral rehabilitation for prisoners and the need for a fundamental shift in America's approach to criminal justice. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio.
It's delightful to be together with your entire family. So what a unique opportunity to work with a family that's been so active in doing wonderful things in communities. So thanks for having us today.
You're very, very welcome. I'd like to begin by having you tell our listeners a little bit about what Prisoner Fellowship does.
We drive in our country the changing of the question dealing with corrections. For 40 years, we basically ask ourselves, how do we get bad people out of our neighborhood? That's driven our numbers of prisoners in the federal and our state systems from about 230,000 to 2.3 million. What we suggest is we ask a different question, and the question is, how do we bring good people home? Because with that 2.2, 2.3 million people in prison, 700,000 prisoners are coming home to our communities every year. And so we ask ourselves, in Corrections in America, how do we bring good people home? Prison Fellowship focuses on the restoration of those affected by crime and incarceration, which means we also take into account what victims are saying and what communities are saying, because we want men and women to come home from prison, not just to survive and avoid breaking the law, but we want them to thrive. We want them to bring their experiences back to communities so that they can be part of making our communities safer.
So how did Prison Fellowship get its start? Tell me a little bit about the founder, Chuck Colson.
Well, Chuck Colson's name will be familiar to some of us who are of a particular age, and we remember that Chuck was part of the Nixon White House. He was known as President Nixon's hatchet man, and known as an individual who would do just about anything that was necessary to support the ideas and the ideals of the president. Chuck got caught up in the Watergate net, ended up going to prison himself, went from special counsel to President Nixon, the office next to President Nixon, to a jail cell in Alabama. He had a transformation, a spiritual transformation during that process, where he realized his heart, his morals were not what they should be. During that time in prison, he recognized that he was there with other men and women in women's facilities that in his mind, and a quote from him, whose minds and hearts were corroding. And we were basically saying that there was a group of people in our country who were not valuable. Chuck came out, started Prison Fellowship. He added Justice Fellowship to that shortly after, and working in advocacy to change public policy. And after that began an aspect of the ministry that helps the country at large understand that everyone is created in the image of God, that everyone has value, regardless of what they've done in life. And Chuck spent his years, until he passed away just a couple years ago, advocating for the inmate. And now, after almost 40 years of ministry, we retain that focus and that heart of our founder to reach the inmate in the prison cells across America and help them come home as quality individuals.
Help them come home. What a wonderful phrase. Tell me, Jim, how did you personally get interested in working with prisoners and their family?
It was a very personal story for me. I had a family member go to prison. I was a pastor for 28 years before I came here, and for about 18 of those years, I had to admit that until I had a personal experience with the corrections system and someone in my family being behind bars, as a pastor, I really did not pay a lot of attention to this issue. And I had to admit that I was wrong. Not only was I wrong in not recognizing a group of people that are in community with me, but wrong because there is a deep spiritual belief that I have that when Jesus says visiting the prisoner is something we do, I wasn't doing that. And I went through a transition. The church I was leading at that time went through a transition in the state of Michigan. We got involved deeply in reentry issues, started some not-for-profits in that, because I understood that I had a family member that if we didn't change the way we looked at the inmate, he was going to come home to a community that wouldn't accept him. And now we have the question of how long does the sentence last? And fortunately for my family member, he came home to a community where he's doing well. He's been out for 3 years. But that's not the case for the vast majority of the inmates coming back. But it was a family experience. It was hearing my own mother not knowing how to talk about a family member who is incarcerated, realizing that we just haven't given people tools to talk about this issue. And now we can see that it's very much an issue across our country with a number of things happening, with the conversation, even in the last election, talking about criminal justice and the amount of money we're spending and not getting, as an end result, a safe community. And understanding that I developed then in getting to know men and women in prison who are coming home, you know, our best asset for safe communities are really the people coming out of our prisons, because they know why crimes are committed and they can help us keep those crimes from being committed.
So what do you feel is the biggest misconception about prisoners and about the families of prisoners?
You know, particularly with the families, we make an assumption, and again, I don't think it's a conscious thing. I think we fall into the misperception that if one individual in the family has broken the law, then the entire family must be tainted by this particular issue. Instead of understanding that in the vast majority of the situations, the children and the members of the family that are left in the free world are the first victims of their family members' crime. That many of them have been also been given a dishonest understanding of what their family members' life was like, particularly the children. We know we have 2.7 million children in America with at least one incarcerated parent, 2.7 million children who had nothing to do with their parents' crime. And we tend to, with this out-of-sight, out-of-mind mentality, asking the question, how do we get bad people out of our community? Once the quote-unquote bad people are out of our community, we tend to now ignore the families that are left. We, in some ways, cause them to be persona non grata. Instead of recognizing that of that 2.7 million children, without intervention, we know that about 70% of them will become incarcerated themselves. We know that third-grade reading levels have everything to do with being able to project whether or not criminal behavior will take place. And looking at some of the very key indicators we have that if we intervene in these areas, we can literally reduce crime in our country. And when we fall into the misperception, we actually avoid maybe one of our greatest opportunities to improve ourselves as a culture and as communities. These are people that weren't part of the crime. We also have a misperception that someone who ends up behind bars, that that's kind of the last chance you get. I continue to meet people behind the bars who belong behind bars. They've made bad choices. They've chosen to break the law. They've violated the social contracts that we have with our communities to care for one another. But they're there to be rehabilitated and restored to learn their lesson. And when they come home, we have to get beyond the understanding that they can't be reintegrated as productive members of our society.
Talk to us a little bit about the stigma and shame that sometimes comes along with being the child of a prisoner, and how Prison Fellowship and your organization helps to change that.
You know, I'll bring you the comments that I get from the children. We have a much more open society than we did a number of years ago. I think we're all probably about the same age. And, you know, there were a number of issues 40 years ago that you just didn't talk about. Families just ignored them. We've come a long way. It's been very positive that we can have open dialogues about things. But we still are not at the place where we can have an open dialogue about a parent being in prison. Children feel, to quote many children, they feel invisible. They feel as though that the people around them don't have the tools to talk about what it's like to have a parent who's incarcerated. They kind of fall in between this crack because, you know, do you have a mom and a dad? Yeah, I have a mom and a dad. But you live with your mom. Are your parents divorced? No, they're not divorced. And there's this leading up to my father's in prison, my mother's in prison. But then we don't have the ability, we haven't given people the tools to say, well, what is that like for you? Do you visit your mom or your dad? And oftentimes our educators are left with, okay, how do I work with this family? We then have the caregivers who are thrown into being single parents, or I meet a lot of grandparents who have become the caregivers for their children. Because a mom or a dad has gone to prison and there wasn't a healthy family unit there to begin with. And many grandparents find themselves suddenly parenting again, or foster care families who step up to invite these individuals in. And the struggle that these children deal with, we know that they don't do as well in school because they don't have the parental assistance at home. We know that their chance of being in poverty is higher than individuals who are not from incarcerated families. And again, as I said, we also know that they have a much, much higher rate of criminal behavior than children who don't have an incarcerated parent. And I think we need to ask different questions of them. And there's a lot of wonderful things going on across our country and a number of partners that we have in this area where we're starting to ask those right questions. But it is something that I think we need to concentrate on. Our misperception is that somehow this family is so broken it can't be restored. And that's a very poor misperception.
Well,
because these are people just like you and I.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about restoration. I would like to hear from you, and I'm sure our listeners would, how your work has helped to restore the dignity of prisoners. Give me some examples of that.
You know, I'm going to start right with Angel Tree because when a father or a mother can sign their child up for something that's a normal parenting behavior, there's dignity in that because they're doing something that's quote-unquote normal. When we can work with an inmate inside the walls of a prison and train them to be a leader And then people in the correction system understand that and utilize their abilities while they're still incarcerated. There's dignity in a man or a woman being able to contribute to the community that they're in, even if that community is a correctional facility. There's dignity in learning how to do a budget. There's dignity before you come out in learning that I can be responsible for my money. There's dignity in learning that you are an individual of value and talent when many of the individuals behind bars in our country, friends, have been told their entire lives that they're not going to amount to anything. And so when they encounter a group of people who are willing to sit down with them and say, no, your title is not criminal. Your title may be accountant. Your title may be community organizer. Your title may be entrepreneur. I'm thrilled every time I hear that we have inmates that come out and start a new business, and it is very regular. And we have entrepreneurial classes that we teach inside the prison walls. We have competitions that we hold across the country. I love going to. We have small business plan competitions where businessmen and women from the free world go in and judge the business plans that the inmates have developed. In some parts of the country, we have individuals that will actually do microfinancing for the winning small business plan. They have dignity and understanding that they haven't hit a dead end. And that their name is not criminal, but they have value. And with Angel Tree, like I said, when they can make a phone call or at a visit, ask their child, what is your favorite game? What is your favorite color? Because they're being coached. You know, hey, these are normal parent questions. Because many of these inmates have never, they don't know their child's favorite color. But when they understand, my name is not prisoner, my name is parent, yeah, they start understanding their value.
You shift that whole consciousness. That's wonderful. So what are the biggest challenges? Before we go to break, tell us the biggest challenges that the children of the prisoners actually face on a day-to-day basis.
The biggest challenge would be the issue of poverty. The vast majority of children in our country that have an incarcerated parent come from the urban cores of America's cities. And they come from situations that are in poverty, or they're below the poverty line. They're going to schools that are subpar because of the lack of funding. They're in areas of our country that are very high crime, and they struggle with just some of the very basic needs of life. And that's one of the things that's so powerful at Angel Tree, is because people go see that, and it motivates people who are not from that neighborhood to do something about it. They struggle. One of the other big struggles is just a sense of security within a family unit for a multitude of reasons. The majority of children with incarcerated parents come from homes that are very disjointed. Many of them are raising their younger siblings because of the situation that's there, and they're experiencing crime on a day-to-day basis. I think that's a very important point for our listeners to hear. Crime is normal for a multitude of these children. It's a normal way of life. And they're being raised in systems and situations where what you and I would consider improper behavior, it's being taught to them by default as proper behavior. Prison is a normal rite of passage,
right,
for several million of our children in our country.
And obviously the challenge here for all of us as we face these 2.3 million people who are looking to come back home in a positive way is to break this cycle now. So we're going to take a break right now, but we'll talk more with Jim Liske about Prison Fellowship's Angel Tree program in much more detail when we get back. In the meantime, I want to tell our listeners about our Indiegogo campaign that is now funding at abetterworld.com/kidsgame. A Better World for Kids lets children have fun and make a difference through good deeds and positive thinking, both in the online virtual world game and in the real world. Additionally, A Better World for Kids has promised to pledge 10% of its post-campaign net profits to charities that help children. So please go to abetterworld.com/kidsgame to learn more and to help fund A Better World for Kids. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more.
I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio, with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
Hi, you're listening to Better Worldians Radio, and now we're speaking right now with Prison Fellowship CEO Jim Liske. Let's welcome back Jim and Mary Sue.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mary Sue.
Hey, Jim, can you tell us a bit about Mary Kay Beard and how the Angel Tree program came about?
You know, Mary Kay is one of the most anomalous people that I know, because she's about 5'6" and maybe 120 pounds. But when Mary Kay was arrested and went to prison about 41 years ago now, she was on the FBI's most wanted list, was the most accomplished safecracker in the country, and her poster in the post office, if you would, said that she was proficient in any known firearm. And so this little lady went to prison, was incarcerated in Alabama, just outside of Birmingham, and she went through a spiritual transformation. And one of the things she noticed when her eyes were open to the needs of the people around her is that moms would go and buy things from the commissary in prison, and they would buy shampoo, or they would buy a toothbrush, and they would bring it back to their cell, and they would wrap it in toilet paper. And when their children would come to visit them in prison before Christmas, they would give them these very simple gifts. And Mary Kay said, I remember thinking to myself, well, those children aren't going to like that, because she wasn't a mother herself. But what she realized was the children really didn't care what they were getting. What they cared about was that they were getting a present from their parent. And so when Mary Kay got out, she literally went down to the local mall in Birmingham, and she said, can I put up a tree and hang the names of children, of the women I was incarcerated with, on the tree? And the mall said, please do that. And then what she realized is all of the names were gone in a day. Chuck Colson, the founder of Prison Fellowship, got word of this that year, and he went and talked to Mary Kay, and he said, Mary Kay, can we make Angel Tree part of Prison Fellowship? And since then, it has gone from one Christmas tree in Alabama, because of the heart of a woman who wanted to care for those who she'd been in prison with, to really being a program that's in 21 countries around the world, serving the children of the incarcerated.
Oh, that's amazing. Do you happen to know if her parents were incarcerated?
Mary Kay's parents were not incarcerated. Actually, in Mary Kay's story, she was raised by a good mom, but did have an abusive father.
Oh.
And much of her life and her decisions were framed by this dysfunctional family that she was raised in.
Oh, boy. How do people get involved in the giving of gifts with the Angel Tree program?
You know, it starts way back in June. And, you know, we think we have to, you know, prepare for Christmas early. But our great volunteers and our partners in the correction world, Mary Sue, begin in June. And we go into the prisons around the country in all 50 states. And we sit down with inmates and have them fill out an application for their child. For many of those parents, as I mentioned in the earlier segment, this is the first parenting activity that they're part of. And they need to list favorite games, favorite color, the age of their child, the birthday, and then they write a personal note. Many of them write, "I'm sorry for my actions. I will love you forever. You're my princess." In very personal notes that go on the package then that's going to be given to the child. We take those applications and prison fellowship and our staff in cooperation with corrections officers across the country. You know, we vet those to make sure that as best to our ability that the information is correct. And then we provide them for people who in their own community say, "We want to deliver a gift in my zip code." Church groups, businesses, civic organization, college groups. We have colleges where their athletic departments take on names of Angel Tree children in their community. And then those individuals go out and they shop with this list that mom or dad has provided. They call the caregiver and make an appointment to go to the door, knock on the door. And in my case, my wife and I do this every year. And I always, if the child is a smaller child, I get down on my knees and I present the gift to the child, and I read the message. I say, "This is a gift from your dad, from your mom, and this is what your mom or dad wants you to know today." And I get to read that message, see the twinkle in a child's eye that their parent, even though they're not there, has not forgotten them at Christmas.
Oh, that's lovely. I guess they're all different type of gifts. I mean, do they actually give a gift that they know the child wants?
You know, that's what we really endeavor to do with the parent is we try and include something that would be personal and that the child would want. And many people who do this and have been doing it for years, they even ask the caregiver when they call, "Is there something specific that they need?" And, you know, we have a guideline, you know, about $25 for the gifts, but oh my goodness, most people don't stay within those guidelines. My own parents, Mary Sue, my father, they got a child and it said that the child liked sports. Well, my dad didn't know which sport, so we bought a ball from every one of them. And, you know, deliver that to the children. And you can imagine what a young man would be like when the star football player from the University of Michigan shows up your door, which actually happened last year, and knocks on your door. And here he is, the one that you hear about in the news, gets down. And then the name of the child's father, that child asks his dad in January, "How did you get that athlete to come and give me your Christmas present?" Well, it was because someone cared enough to make sure that that child's name was on that list, and someone cared enough to help us do this ministry.
Well, so these are all volunteers that I guess belong to a church group, you're saying, and then they pick up the gifts and personally deliver them to children. Is that typically how it works?
That's typically how it works. Some people, and again, it's businesses. We have businesses around the country that do this as their Christmas activity as a staff, where they do this. And we have some organizations that have an Angel Tree party. So they invite the children and they invite the caregivers to come to a party. They feed them dinner and they have a festive occasion for them. We have churches that do that. So we help every group kind of do it the way they feel it would be special in their community. You know, we want people to own this and really feel as though it's what they're doing and it's what they're giving. And what we hear, Mary Sue, is in many of the situations, the relationship doesn't stop at Christmas. That Angel Tree is really, it's a starting line and not a finish line. Church groups will invite them to join with them in other activities at church. Businesses get involved in helping with some of the financial needs that are there. And we have civic organizations. Like I mentioned, some of the colleges that get involved have gotten involved even in tutoring and mentoring of these children. And so we encourage and try and give tools that would help these individuals use Angel Tree as a beginning beginning of caring for these children.
It's a wonderful thing to do in this, you know, give you the spirit of Christmas too. I mean, you really feel like you're impacting the lives of the parents and the children. What kind of feedback do you get from the kids and the parents when they get these gifts?
January and February is some of my most delightful months here at Prison Fellowship because we get the stories back in. You know, the men and women in prison are so moved by this that, you know, since October, we receive checks from inmates, Mary Sue. We'll receive a $14 check or a $28 check from an inmate who writes a little note and says, "Angel Tree has been so important to my family, I want to be part of it continuing on." I mean, you can imagine how moved I am when I read that because, you know, inmates make anywhere between 20 and 40 cents an hour at their jobs in the correctional facilities. These aren't individuals that have means, but it meant so much for this individual to know that their child had a gift with their name on it, that they were able to send a message, that someone partnered with them in the act of parenting. We have inmates that tell us, prisoners that say, you know, when my child came back and shared with me their excitement at receiving a gift, it made me determined to be a better person while I'm doing my time. If someone is willing to do this for me, then I'm willing to do it even while I'm still incarcerated. We hear children saying things like, I knew my mom wouldn't forget me at Christmas. One of the things that I hear repetitively, and from adults who were Angel Tree children 25, 30 years ago, one of the things, and I never thought about this, right, because I've never lived in that world. But I hear people saying, you know, when I went back to school in January, when all of the other kids were saying, I got this from my dad, I got this from my mom, I didn't have to stand on the other side of the room. I could be part of that conversation. I could say, yeah, and I got this from my dad, too. I didn't have to be ashamed. See, there's that shame thing.
Yes.
I didn't have to be ashamed of my father.
Oh, boy. Now, I understand that kids still need more sponsors.
We do. We have about 20,000 kids right now that we're still seeking to serve, and we're determined that's going to happen. But if any of your listeners wish to get involved in helping us do that, you can go to angeltree.org, and all the information on how to help doing that is right there on that website. And we'd love to have you partner with us to touch base with these kids. You know, again, a lot of these kids in our northern climates, as you've already mentioned, and you guys are doing some awesome stuff, putting warm coats on kids, but that's an issue for kids whose parents are incarcerated in Michigan and Minnesota and North Dakota and all of those places. And oftentimes it's hats and mittens and coats that go along. We have a group of people in Northeast Michigan that I met with, and you know, they're a group of senior citizens. The ladies crochet blankets for every Angel Tree child. And they send blankets out, a real personal touch. And they say, well, we just feel like grandmas to all these children. And it is so fulfilling for them. There's this unbelievable benefit when you're caring and you're giving. I mean, we all know about how joyful it is at any time of the year to just give an act of kindness, to be altruistic, to extend ourselves and be generous with people. And I hear that from the people that participate in Angel Tree. The vast majority of people who participate in Angel Tree once never leave us. They want to do it over and over and over again.
That's a beautiful feeling, too. It really does benefit people to do good, as we know, just from our study of positive psychology. When you do good for people, it helps your own well-being. And talk about pay it forward. That seems like even the inmates are paying it forward when they get in, and so forth.
They are, very much so. And I think, Mary Sue, it's so important for me that we connect this to the issue of safe communities, that we understand that not only are we paying this forward to a child, to a family, to a parent, but we're paying this forward at a very communal level. Because when we introduce the Angel Tree child to another way of doing life, and I don't want in any way to be critical of the incarcerated parent, because you know what, I haven't lived in their shoes. I don't know what kind of tragedy they've dealt with in their life. They've made a poor decision, and we're very careful. It doesn't help the inmate to excuse them or not hold them accountable. The data is very clear that unless a prisoner understands that they've injured someone because of their crime, even if it's just injuring the sense of safety in a community, their chance of going back to prison goes up. And so there's dignity in being held accountable. There's dignity in being told you can have control of your own life. You can make decisions that keep you out of prison. So I don't want to at all be judgmental, but we do need to give these children a different look at how life can be done. What does it mean to be a citizen of a community? When we do that, we're reducing crime. The data is clear that we reduce the chance of that child going to prison, of committing a crime, when we reach out to them in a manner that says to them, you matter. And this is what people of a healthy community do. We care. That impacts the child's sense of what they can do in the future.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that 70% of the incarcerated parents' children go to prison? Did I hear you say that?
That's correct. That's the data that we see, and we understand that's the effect of ignoring this situation, of trying to go out of sight, out of mind with it, of ignoring what's happening in our urban cores with the issue of poverty. We still measure the number of cells we're going to need in the correction system in America by what third grade reading levels are, Mary Sue. We know there's a direct correlation between how well a child reads in third grade and whether or not they will engage in criminal behavior. There are some very simple things we can do for these children, and one of them is teaching them reading in the third grade, showing them a different way of living, showing them the importance of being part of a community, showing them that people should care when it doesn't benefit you. Those are all very basic principles of living in community. And Angel Tree is one of the things that do that. That's why we also partner with mentoring and tutoring organizations. Yes. We believe very clearly that when the parent gives us the name of a child, that they're entrusting us to a level of stewardship. So we have some wonderful partners across the country in mentoring and tutoring. And we make sure that the children who we receive are on the list of being part of those things. In Nebraska, we have a wonderful partner of former athletes that actually played at the University of Nebraska who now are involved in a mentoring program that former Coach Osborne has set up. And they mentor all of our Angel Tree children in Nebraska. And we have those partners all over the country. So again, it's more than just that gift. It's helping that child engage in other activities that will help break the cycle of crime.
Yes. What other kinds of mentoring programs does Angel Tree have? That sounds very interesting.
We participate in ensuring, as I said, that there are, you know, tutoring, mentoring type situations. And again, we don't do those directly, but we make sure the names of these children are there. We have caregivers that call us and we direct them to different places. We have scholarships for camping that we provide. We work with organizations across the country to raise additional funds for the children of the incarcerated to make sure that's there. We are constantly advocating for the children of the incarcerated. Oftentimes they don't have a voice in their community. And so what does it mean? We're involved in movements of improving education across the country, making sure that the voice of the incarcerated child is heard at the table. And so camping, mentoring, tutoring, in helping churches understand what does it mean to specifically have ministries that touch this group, and how do you train your congregation to engage this area? So houses of faith, we have training for them that's involved to help welcome these children into their midst and give them a sense of a new community.
That's great. Do you have any favorite success stories that you might share with our listeners about the mentoring program?
Well, you're challenging me to pick from, you know, this long list of success stories, but probably one of the most personal ones, actually, I got involved in before I came to Prison Fellowship, and I guess that's why I'm such a strong advocate, Mary Sue, is before I was in this position, I was involved in Angel Tree in a local community. And one of my friends, his name is Doug, went to prison. Oh. And when he went to prison, his children were young, elementary age. And, you know, Doug's family is one of the success stories because there was a group of people that stayed with him, and his children were Angel Tree children. When I came to Prison Fellowship, they were in high school then, and I sat right down with them one weekend when I saw them, and I said, okay, tell me about Angel Tree. Why was it significant to you? And the young lady, she's the youngest child, she was in 10th grade at the time, she said, well, I always knew that there'd be a present from my dad under the tree. I always knew that even though Dad wasn't there personally, that he was going to be represented. And the young man said to me, it caused me to understand that my dad hadn't forgotten me. And it caused me to understand that even though Dad wasn't here, he was doing all he could as a father. You know, as a young man, that's a pretty significant statement to understand that Dad was accepting responsibility for his behavior, and Dad was doing all he could, even though he wasn't there, to stay engaged with the family. And I said, well, tell me what that meant when Dad came home. And the young man looked at me and he said, it meant that in some ways Dad had never left. And it was easier to have Dad come home and to have a relationship with him because Angel Tree made sure that at a time when family is what we all talk about, the part of my dad was there, a direct quote. These are teenage kids now. The interesting thing about this success story is when Doug came home from prison, We actually hired him in our situation to be the executive director of a reentry program. Uh-huh. Doug was a highly educated individual when he went to prison, a very capable leader. And when we came home, we hired him. And we said, you know what, Doug, none of us have come home from prison. We want you to help us understand how to welcome people back from prison. So not only was Angel Tree significant in his kids' lives, it was significant in his life. Doug is still in Southwest Michigan right now leading an organization that helps reentering offenders when they come home be reassimilated into community and help their families be strong. So it's a multifaceted. When I asked his wife, what was significant for you? She looked at me, she said, Jim, we couldn't afford presents under the tree. She said, I could barely afford a tree. And to know that Angel Tree was going to provide some significant gifts for my children under the tree, it was almost as though Doug was still here bringing in a paycheck and helping provide for his family. See, it's this bridge. It's a reunification bridge that helps families get back together again after incarceration.
Well, it sure is.
Wonderful, wonderful work. Great stories and wonderful work that you guys are doing. We're going to have to take another break right now. And as a reminder, I just want to mention again that our Indiegogo campaign is now fundingatabetterworld.com/kidsgame. And that the game is about having fun for the kids with, and having them make a difference through the good deeds and positive thinking, both in the game itself and in the real world itself. And you can actually help us make this game a reality by going to abetterworld.com/kidsgame, backing us and passing it along. The more eyeballs we get, the more people see this. The feedback that we're getting is they love what we're about to do, and they want to get behind it, and they want to back it. So please go to abetterworld.com/kidsgame. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio, with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
Hi, we're back live with Prisoner Fellowship CEO Jim Liskey. Jim's talking about a program called Angel Tree, and its goal is to meet the physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of the families of prisoners.
Hi, Jim. This is Greg.
Hey, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Can you tell us about the Angel Tree Star of Victory Award?
The Angel Tree Star of Victory Award is one of my favorite awards that we give out because it's all about someone who has been an Angel Tree recipient and has really taken their life, and if you would, out of what most of us would consider shambles, has really become not only an advocate for people who've been in a situation like them, but a community leader and has really proven that you know, wherever you're starting in life, that doesn't have to be your finish line. And so we take great joy of handing that award out to people all over the country every year. And it is so beautiful to see that individuals, you know, we're able to have people come alongside of them. We're able to see their value and their worth. And we're able to see that what they went through is actually a benefit. And that can all be turned around, and that can all be used as a platform to do awesome things in their community.
Yeah, that's amazing. I understand that Miss America 2012 was the inaugural winner. What's her story?
You know, Erica Harold actually was one of those individuals that she is just such. She continues to be. She's on our board right now. I'm sorry, I've got the wrong Miss America. We got two Miss Americas involved here. Yes, Miss America 2012. Forgive me. Her dad was incarcerated in Wisconsin, and you know, when she actually was on the platform, she said that she was going to advocate for the children of the incarcerated, and she continues to do that now, even after she's worn her crown. And throughout the country, every stop that she made, she raised awareness of what it was like to be a child whose dad was in prison, what it was like to have that shame, what it was like to go visit your dad and not be able to touch him, but only talk to him through thick glass. And she just did some awesome work. But again, there's a young lady who didn't see this as something that was going to hold her back. She saw it as something that could be a platform for her. And she was an Angel Tree child for a number of years, as was her sister. And now her dad and herself and her family continue to advocate. I mentioned Erica Harold, who actually is a former Miss America. She was able to actually come alongside of Miss America 2012 and help her with some of that. And two Miss Americas working in conjunction to raise awareness of this issue of children of incarcerated parents.
That is amazing, and it's so amazing that she could receive all that for those many years and then find a way to give back. I think that's incredible. I wanted to ask you what example that you hope this sets for other children with incarcerated parents.
You know, just to set the example, Greg, that you're number one, you're not defined by what your parents do. And man, that's a tough thing to learn, isn't it? But you're not defined by what your parents do. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Greg. That's kind of ironic, isn't it? But we won't go there. We won't get into that. But you're not defined by that. And you can make your own choices now, and you can learn from what's happened in your parents' lives. And, you know, Angel, that's part of Angel Tree, too, where we try and teach the parents to teach that to their children. That when a prisoner understands I'm not defined by my past behaviors, I can be defined by future behaviors, that's part and parcel of this. But I would hope that Angel Tree children, every time that they receive a gift and they see somebody, you know, doing something for them, that they would see, wow, I can have that. I can be that. We often say around here at Prison Fellowship that the inmate is the answer. The inmate's not the problem. The inmate's the solution. And I would say that about Angel Tree children. Angel Tree children are not a group of people that we need to turn into a project. They're a tremendous asset for our country because they have a story to tell about how achievement can take place in the midst of struggle. And an inmate is not the problem. The inmate can be an answer. Our inmates across the country, friends, know how to break the law. So who better to ask about how to stop that? They're experts in it. And we can engage them in the solutions. And I would hope Angel Tree children would hear that message clearly, that I have a story to tell, I have a story that's powerful, and I have a story that can change the world.
You know, I love that way of thinking about it, you know, that you know, this is how to achieve in the midst of struggle, you know, how to take responsibility for oneself in the midst of these circumstances. I think that's wonderful. You know, I know you've visited over 100 prisons and advocate for prison reform. What do you think are the biggest issues facing prisoners and their families?
Greg, I always start with complimenting our criminal justice system. We have the best criminal justice system in the world. We have the best judicial system in the world. I meet wardens who don't see people in their correctional facilities as criminals. They see them as people. They see them as having value. We have corrections officers. We only hear, you know, in the news, the negative situations. We have hundreds of thousands of corrections officers across this country who care about the people that are in those facilities. But one of the things that we need to look at is continuing to advance that thought that every individual incarcerated in our country is created in the image of God. They have value. And even get ourselves starting to understand, you know what, the next great inventor may be in a prison cell today. The next great entrepreneur may be in a prison cell. The cure to cancer, could it be there? You know, thinking the way we do about individuals and the rest of our society. Greg, some people are going to choose to go back to prison, and some people are going to choose to participate in behaviors where, for the sake of public safety, they need to remain in prison. That is unbelievably sad to me that people would make that choice. But we don't ever, we're never accused of being soft on crime because we're very high on holding people accountable for their actions. But 700,000 people, over 95% of the people in prison today, are coming home to our communities. They're going to be in line at Walmart with us. They're going to be at school functions with us. We need to communicate to them that you need to choose to come home and engage in your community where your giftedness is being a contributed factor to community health. And we need to embed that into our criminal justice system. We need to teach that. We have a warden's training program where that's the core of what we train wardens, to steward the people inside your facilities as if they are individuals who are coming home to do great things. See them as having potential. Again, it's that question that I started the program with. We need to ask, how do we bring good people home? We are still asking, how do we get bad people out of our neighborhood? If we would shift the question, we would get a very, very different answer, and our programming would change. I'm a huge advocate, Greg, as we are as an organization, that we move away from some of our sentencing guidelines. Mm-hmm. Three strikes and you're out, minimum sentences, fixed minimum sentences. They haven't contributed to public safety. They've only contributed to a rise in our prison population and a rise in cost. When we incarcerate someone who has a chemical addiction and we don't treat them for that chemical addiction while they're incarcerated, we get a chemically addicted person out of prison at the end. We have not achieved the goal of reforming the behavior and restoring the person. And there are other less expensive, more effective ways to do that than incarceration.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, because you're doing such important work, and I want to make sure, you know, we only have a few minutes left, our listeners here. What's the best way for people to support Angel Tree?
Again, go to angeltree.org. The website's very self-explanatory. Even I can manage my way through it. If you're in a situation where, man, we're right towards the end of the year, I don't know how much time that I have, financial contributions help us to empower other people to get this done. And so that's a really, for most people, the easiest way is to invest financially. And I would say that if that's what you're going to do, don't feel as though you're just throwing money at something. I want you to visualize that if I go and contribute financially, I want you to visualize that you're empowering a person who's walking up a porch, maybe a porch that has a broken railing and a house that doesn't look like there really should be anybody living in it. That's really the case in many, many times. That's the case in the community that I will go to and my wife and my family will go to, extreme poverty. I want you to visualize that if you contribute financially, you're with that person walking up that porch and knocking on that door. If your community, group, or church, or business would like to engage, we're taking groups right up until next Monday. So right up until the 15th, you can go on the website. There's a way to fill out. We will endeavor to get you names of children in your zip code area. We're not asking anyone to solve a national problem. We're asking them to do this right in their own community. We'll endeavor to do that. That, too, is right on angeltree.org, and you can make that happen there.
Well, this is amazing work that you're doing, and we compliment you and all the people associated with this amazing program. For our listeners, you can find out more about Prison Fellowship and the Angel Tree program by going to angeltree.com or prisonfellowship.org. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio, and great work. Keep it up. We wish you all the best. We realize here today that we've got an issue and we've got to deal with it, and you guys are doing great work in doing just that. So thank you for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio.
Thanks for having us, and Merry Christmas to all of our listeners.
Yes, thank you very much. For our listeners, please join us next week on Better Worldians Radio when we'll be speaking with Kyle Zimmer, the president and CEO of First Book, an organization that's working to provide children in need with brand new high-quality books for the first time. Joining Kyle will be senior advisor Carrie Palmquist as well. Before we go, I'd like to remind you that Our Indiegogo campaign is now funding again at abetterworld.com/kidsgame, and we're off to a reasonably good start, but we still need your help. So please check us out. A Better World for Kids lets kids have fun and make a difference through good deeds and positive thinking, both in the online virtual world game and in the real world. Additionally, A Better World for Kids has promised to pledge 10% of its post-campaign net profits to charities that help children. So you can become an active backer of this mission and bring out the very best in our kids and encourage them to do good deeds and pass it along to your friends and constituents and contacts as well, so that they can become aware of what we're doing, what we hope to do, and how we're trying to make a big difference in the lives of kids all around the world. Until next time, everyone, in the meantime, please be a better worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at BetterWorldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world.